STR podcasts are made possible through the generous donations of our listeners. To support STR today, go to str.org and click on Donate in the upper right-hand corner.
This is Brett Kunkel, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Podcast.
Well, I have been at Talbot School of Theology doing a master's degree in philosophy. And I have actually been at Talbot now for, well, let's see, it's a 2 years master's degree in philosophy. And I've been there kind of trying to cram this master's degree into, I guess it's been 10 years now. It's been tough, but I've been able to do it so far. And, it's actually a tough degree. A lot of guys don't do it in 2 years, but most people don't do it in 10 years either. I'm doing one class a semester, but as I've been there, my wife has gotten involved with the Talbot Wives Fellowship Group, which is just wives of seminary students there who gather together for fellowship and for training and ministry preparation. And my wife became friends with a lady in that group named Jamie. Now, Jamie grew up in a Christian home. She grew up in a Christian home. She went to Christian school from kindergarten until 12th grade. And then she graduated from her Christian school and went into a Christian college where she studied nursing, graduated from a Christian college, and then went out into a hospital and worked in a hospital and had kind of been just kind of sheltered all of her life in the Christian bubble. And by the time my wife had met her, Jamie was plagued with all kinds of doubts. Because what had happened to her was as she left the Christian bubble and went into a hospital and started working, she kind of was under this impression that there are all these non-Christians out there who are just waiting to fill that emptiness and that Christ-shaped void in their heart, and they're just waiting for a Christian to come along and share the truth. And then they would fall down on their knees and give their life to Christ. But what she discovered was that as she began to engage with some of these non-Christians, she began to get a pushback. She began to get challenges and objections to her Christian faith that she did not know how to answer. Right? She had never, ever been challenged in her life. And so now she's getting these objections. She doesn't know how to answer them. Right? Why do you think God even exists? Why should you trust the Bible? Jesus was just merely a good man. She doesn't know how to answer them, and what happens is she is just overcome with doubt. And so my wife had become friends with her and was kind of talking her through this, and we ended up having Jamie and her husband over for dinner one night to kind of talk through this a little bit more. So after dinner, we're sitting at our kitchen table in our home, and so I said, Jamie, tell me about some of the doubts that you're struggling with. And she really started from square one. She said, Brett, I'm not even sure that God is even there. She was doubting the existence of God. And as she began to share her doubts, tears just started streaming down her face. And she just began to cry and to just unload all of this doubt right there as we sat at the kitchen table. Here is someone who grew up in the church, was in the church for 22, 23 years of her life, in Christian education, and now just overcome with doubt. And that is really a vision that I do not want to see in your own life. As you, down the road, after spending time within the church, with spending time within a Christian home, being plagued by this kind of doubt. Now, what do we mean when we talk about doubt? Let's define doubt. Doubt is simply uncertainty about God. It's some kind of uncertainty we have about God. Now, what I want you to realize is that doubt is a universal human experience. Doubt is not simply something a believer in God faces. It's not something that is unique to Christians, But doubt is a universal experience. Listen to what C.S. Lewis says in Mere Christianity. He said, "Now that I am a Christian, I do have moods in which the whole thing looks very improbable." And I echo that. There are times when I have struggled with my faith. And there are times when I have doubted. But I want you to notice what he says about his past. He said, "But when I was an atheist, I had moods in which Christianity looked terribly probable." And so what he's saying here is, hey, even when I was an atheist, I had doubts as well. I had doubts about my atheism. I thought, my gosh, maybe Christianity's true. And so it's not just the believer who has doubts, but I think doubt is a universal human experience. It's something experienced by Christians and non-Christians. And so if you are here, in here, and you have doubted at all, or maybe you're currently struggling with some doubt, I want you to know that that is okay. And hopefully you find that this is a safe place to get some of those doubts out on the table. And if you struggle with doubt, you're actually in very good company. Because when we look through the pages of the Bible, we discover great men and women who experienced doubt. We look at Abraham, and Abraham experiences doubt, right? And he's in the Faith Hall of Fame in the book of Hebrews. Job experiences doubt. David experiences doubt. Jeremiah experiences doubt. John the Baptist experiences doubt. Thomas experiences doubt. Peter experiences doubt. So if you doubt, you're in good company. And I don't think that that kind of doubt, that uncertainty towards God, questions, I don't think that's sin. I think it's a natural part of being human. And so I want you to know that it's okay that you've experienced the doubts. Now here's what I want to do for a few minutes. I want to do some reflection. I want you to think through three particular areas. And I'm going to have you write down on your paper some answers to three key questions. Here's the first question. I want you to spend a few moments writing down your top three questions of or objections to Christianity. So what are those kind of factual questions that you might have? It could be about God's existence. It could be about Scripture. It could be about Jesus. It could be some internal issue, like an area of theology. It could be any number of issues. But when it comes to Christianity, what are your three biggest questions? Or what are objections that you've heard that you've said, man, that's a tough objection. I'm not quite sure how to answer it. What are those kind of top three? Go ahead and spend a few minutes and write those down on your notes. Okay, take a few seconds to finish that up. And then I want you to move to a second question. And this question gets a little more personal. The second question is this, second kind of instruction is to write down the top three hurts in your life. These may be hurts that have been resolved. They may be hurts that have been unresolved. So when you look back in your life, and you can go all the way back to your earliest memories, what are the experiences in life that maybe have been most painful for you? What are those episodes in life that have been hurtful, have been painful, have been times of just maybe for some immense pain? Maybe it's moderate pain. We've all experienced different levels of pain, but what are those three hurts in your life? So it could be anything from divorced parents to some kind of abuse, physically, emotionally, sexually. It could be a friend who has stabbed you in the back or was disloyal to you. Could be a leader or a teacher or someone in a position of authority who somehow abused their power. It could be any kind of thing that has caused you pain. So write those down. And then lastly, again, another kind of personal issue. I want you to be honest with yourself and write down the top three sins you struggle with most. Now, if you're concerned about kind of maybe someone seeing this, I don't know, just make up some code or something that you would understand. But I want you to be honest with yourself. What are the sins that you struggle with? I mean, just be brutally honest. What do you struggle with? Maybe it's sin in relationships. Maybe it's gossip or mean-spirited. Maybe judgment. Could be lust. Maybe that plays itself out in different ways. Could be pornography. It could be rebellion towards your parents or to Christ. What are those three sins that you struggle with most? All right, now there's a reason why I'm having you start off with some reflection. Because doubt does not come in the same shape and size in every instance. There's not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to doubt. But each of these three areas corresponds to a different source of doubt. And so the first one, when I had you write down your top three questions or objections to Christianity, that corresponds to the first source of doubt, which is intellectual doubt. Intellectual doubt. And when it comes to intellectual doubt, this is where we question Christianity's truthfulness or a particular area of Christianity's truthfulness. And intellectual doubt can be caused by unanswered questions. It can be caused by maybe mistaken views. It can be caused by bad thinking. It can be caused by bad logic, a number of things. In fact, when I was a freshman in college, I went through a very major struggle with intellectual doubt. And it was brought on by my freshman philosophy class. I had philosophy 101 at a junior college in Southern California. And that's where I met this guy, Dr. David Lane. And Dr. David Lane was a very charismatic teacher, very popular teacher. Students loved this guy. And he was a very, very effective teacher. And of course, in Philosophy 101, we would talk about all the big issues of life. We talk about the big questions like the meaning of life, the origin of life, God's existence, world religions, all kinds of big questions. And the way that Dr. David Lane kind of conducted his classes, we would have a lot of class discussion, and he would get a lot of our feedback, and there'd just be a lot of dialogue. And so as I began to give my input in class, it became apparent that I was a Christian, and maybe the only Christian in this class of about 20 students, at least the only Christian who was kind of weighing in and giving some feedback. And so Professor Lane kind of picked up on this. And so there were times throughout that semester then where he would begin to single me out and offer me very serious intellectual challenges. And so I remember he would come into class. He'd have maybe a short 10 or 15 minute lecture prepared where he'd kind of dismantle some aspect of Christianity. I remember he would go after like the Levitical law and talk about the inconsistency of Christians who hold to some objective morality, and yet you've got this kind of allegedly changing morality in the Bible from the Old to the New Testament. And then, before he'd open it up for any kind of class discussion, he would turn to me. And he would say, "Brett, now we know you're a Christian, so we'll give you a first shot at this. Why don't you go ahead and respond? What would you say to this kind of challenge?" Now, fortunately, I was smart enough to know that I didn't know very much. And I didn't want to open my mouth and not only make myself look foolish, I didn't want to make Christ look foolish. And so I would decline. I said, "Well, I don't have anything to say." And he would try to push me a little bit. And I remember he'd kind of walk closer to my desk and he'd say, "Come on, Brett. Come on. I know you want to say something." And I would decline. I had no answers. But I knew something was at stake here. So I would kind of chase him down to his office and talk with him in the privacy of his office. And he would just rip me apart. And there was one day in particular, I was sitting in his office. And we were talking about some of these issues, and he said, "Brett, do you have a Bible on you?" And I had one in my backpack, and he said, "Pull it out." So I pulled it out. He said, "Now get out a piece of paper and a pen." So I got out a piece of paper and a pen. He said, "Okay, now turn to the book of Matthew." So I turned to Matthew, and he said, "Turn to the end of Matthew. I want you to find the resurrection account." And then he proceeded to read through the resurrection account with me. And then he had me write down the details on that sheet of paper. And then he had me draw a second column. And he had me write down Mark, and then he had me turn to the book of Mark, and he had me turn to the resurrection accounts, and he had me read the resurrection account, and then he had me write down the details of the resurrection account in Mark. And then we did the same thing with Luke, wrote down the details. And he showed me the differences between Matthew, Mark, and Luke in the resurrection account. And of course, his claim was that these were bona fide contradictions right there in the text, in the Bible that I was reading. He just showed me contradictions. I'd grown up in the church. I'd been in the church at that point for about 19 years. I'd never heard this before. I had absolutely no answer, no response. I wasn't taught apologetics. I had no defense. And I remember walking out of his office with kind of this fear and trembling, because I knew there was a lot at stake. Because if he was true, if he was right, if Dr. David Lane was right and what he was saying was true, then I knew I could not trust this book if it was full of error and contradiction. And so what this ushered into my life was a period of serious intellectual doubt, where I wrestled with these kind of questions. And I went back to square one, and I started with God's existence, and I just wrestled with questions and intellectual doubt and kind of went through those. And so I've experienced serious intellectual doubt, and I look back on that time, and I think, gosh, that doubt, that intellectual doubt, could have led me right out of the doors of the church and could have caused me to walk away from Christ. Now, in God's sovereignty, he used that in my life to make a huge difference, and to ultimately, just going through that period of doubt, strengthened my faith like never before. Because I did something. I didn't just put those questions on the shelf. I did something. I tried to seek out satisfactory answers to these questions. And so my advice to you, if you are struggling with doubt, if you wrote down some serious questions, here's what you need to do. You need to seek out answers that are going to satisfy you. Seek out satisfactory answers. I want you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, 3 through 5. I think for those of us who have struggled with intellectual doubt, Paul says in 2 Corinthians, go after that stuff. Go after it. Listen to what he says. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 3. He says, for though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. What kind of strongholds? Verse 5, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Like here, Paul uses some aggressive language. And so as Dr. David Lane raises these arguments, these strongholds against the truth of Christianity, what I had to do is I had to seek out counterarguments. I had to find out ways to demolish those arguments if they were indeed false. And so we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. And that's what we want to do. And so very practically, what does this look like? Well, you've already started the process. You've identified the top three questions or objections. You've written those down. And so now what I want you to do, you've got some homework here at Summit, is I want you to get resources on that topic. And you've got a bookstore right back there that is filled with all kinds of resources. So you maybe you're at square one. Maybe you have some serious questions about God's existence. And so what you need to do is go find a book or a resource, or you need to get online and go to str.org or strplace.org, and you need to find some resources that will help you with that particular question and find some arguments for God's existence. And then thirdly, you ought to do this with some other people. And so I would encourage you not to kind of cover up those doubts that you've written down there, but share those with people. And maybe what you'll discover is that even here at Summit, the doubts that you have, you're going to find that some of your fellow Summit attenders here have some of those very same doubts. And then that's when you get together and you say, okay, doesn't matter if we live across the country from each other, let's study this together. And then we'll Skype every week and we'll talk through it and we'll push each other to certain resources. Or you go back to your home church and you talk to your youth pastor, or you talk to some friends in your youth group, or you talk to your mom and dad and you get some people to help you walk through this process. This is exactly what I did when Dr. David Lane threw all these challenges at me. I started talking to Christians that I respected in my church. And there were some Christians that didn't have much to offer. I remember one guy who was an elder, good-hearted man, loved the Lord, but when I laid out all these challenges, the only thing he could say to me was, well, I just have faith. I just have faith. And that was it. And of course, for a college student who's being pounded in Philosophy 101, that was not satisfying. And so I kept at it. And I found some resources and some people who were able to help me find some serious answers. And so that's a very practical plan if you're struggling with intellectual doubt. Secondly, I want you to make sure that you plug into Christian community, that you stay plugged in to Christian community. When you're going through periods of doubt, one of the worst things that you can do is to unplug from the church, is to unplug from your youth group, is to unplug from the body of Christ. Okay? Do not do that. That will exacerbate the situation. Listen to what C.S. Lewis says. He says, make sure that if you have once accepted Christianity, then some of its main doctrines shall be deliberately held before your mind for some time every day. That is why daily prayers and religious reading and church going are necessary parts of the Christian life. We have to be continually reminded of what we believe. Neither this belief nor any other will automatically remain alive in the mind. It must be fed. And the primary vehicle that we are fed on this earth is through the church. So stay plugged in to Christian community. Stay plugged in and be surrounded by those who are walking with Christ. Now, maybe you've got some friends that are struggling with intellectual doubts, Christians or non-Christians. What do you do for your friends who are struggling with doubt? Well, you patiently, let me repeat that, you patiently answer their questions, right? 1 Peter 3:15, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts always, 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 being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. So patiently, gently, respectfully, answer their questions. Deal with their questions. Now let's make this real practical. How do we do that? Well, we had a great session this morning on where to start. Start with tactics. Start with questions. First, just ask them questions. What they believe, why they believe it. Ask them about their doubts. What are the specific doubts? And then get the reasons why they think the way they think. And ask lots of questions. Do not feel the pressure to immediately jump into your answers, but make sure you create space for them to feel like you're a safe place where they can actually surface doubts. All right, especially for your Christian friends who are going through times of doubt, you need to be a safe place where they can throw those doubts on the table and they realize that you're not going to hypocritically judge them, that you're not going to condemn them, but that you're going to create some space where they can just kind of get that stuff out and start processing that with somebody. And then secondly, you listen patiently. You don't jump into your answers right away, but you just give them that space by listening. And then thirdly, you use your apologetics. As they raise questions like maybe the problem of evil or questions about the reliability or authority of the scriptures, this is where then you can engage apologetically. And you take that knowledge that you've gained and you use that to help them find some satisfactory answers to their questions. Francis Schaeffer, the great apologist, said this. He said, if I have only an hour with someone, I will spend the first 55 minutes asking questions and finding out what is troubling their heart and mind. And then the last 5 minutes, I will share something of the truth. And that's the kind of space we want to create for people to get out their tough questions about Christianity.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts and radio program are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.